Hello, everybody. I hope you guys are all well. I am back on the podcasting airwaves. Today is Thursday, October 22nd, and it is time for our Wednesday reviews. We're going to start with AEW. I do want to apologize that I did not get a review up for last Friday SmackDown or this past Monday's episode of Raw. I was a little bit busy doing my own thing. And if I can't get the reviews up within about 48 hours of when the show aired, I just don't see the point of going back and recording it with social media and all the other podcasts. I know that people have other outlets, and I don't really just want to waste anyone's time recording an hour-long podcast if all I'm going to do is rehash a bunch of stuff that everybody already saw and everybody already knows about. But a little bit of exciting, not necessarily wrestling news, but I think it will eventually play into some of the content and the opportunities that I'm able to produce with this podcast. But I was busy these past few days because I've been looking for a new car, and I got a new car. I've got one from a local dealership here in Northern California, and the reason that's exciting and relative to this podcast is, for those that don't know, I had unfortunately totaled my previous vehicle, and I was kind of working without a car, getting around through things like Uber and carpooling with family members. And as a grown-ass man, it is very hard to not have a car, just from a pride standpoint and a independence standpoint. But I wanted to make sure that the next vehicle I got was going to be able to play a factor in what I want to pursue, which is wrestling. So I didn't want to just get a little car. As I'm transitioning from one passion to another, the previous passion being music, and transitioning into wrestling, I want to be able to make myself as available as possible to all of these wrestling promotions. And so that's why it was important for me to get a vehicle that had enough space and also was reliable enough and low enough on mileage, because whenever this COVID stuff ends, I got my fingers crossed, optimistically hoping that it'll be sooner rather than later. But whenever all this stuff ends and things start opening up, I know there has been wrestling going on. I know promotions are doing stuff, and I'm not talking about the big boys. I'm talking about smaller independents. But I just don't know that it's safe right now to do that kind of stuff. And I don't really want to be at the center of any sort of controversy. I know that in Northeast, they just did that promotion. It was kind of a multi-organization thing. They called it the Collective. A really cool, awesome event that would have been amazing. Really, under any other circumstances, I love seeing promotions kind of cross promote and work together. But unfortunately, with COVID still a top concern of a lot of people, and we're not going to get political, but whether or not you believe it's true or not, or you think it's planned or political or what have you, it is something that's at the forefront of people's minds. It is a public health issue, and I just don't want to get wrapped up in not only putting myself at a risk of health problems, but I do have people in my family that are very close and that I care about a lot that do have autoimmune deficiencies. So even if I was able to get this virus and beat it easily, I wouldn't want to risk exposing one of my loved ones to something like that, or anyone, even a stranger, but especially, of course, a close family member. So I'm just kind of riding it out, just like everybody else on this planet. But whenever it resumes and gets a little safer, whether it means wearing face masks and temperature checks and these different safety protocols, I wanted to get this vehicle that was reliable and, as I said, large enough, because I want to be able to drive all around California, possibly pursue some opportunities in neighboring states like Nevada, maybe Southern Oregon. I'm not going to get too crazy with it because I do want to stay focused on my day job, because without my day job, nothing else would be possible. They're really flexible and going to allow me to pursue my dreams and follow my passions and things. So I want to keep that healthy balance. But I've got a little bit of a bucket list, some things that I want to try and accomplish. I'm hoping for 2021 because I've been spending a lot of time reflecting and looking back on 2020 as a year and what I thought it was going to be back in December of 2019. And even in the early part of the year, I had these goals, these New Year's resolutions, these things that I wanted to accomplish that pertained surrounding music. I was going to build a website, and I did. I was going to establish this brand, which I did. I didn't really get to pursue anything further than that because, much like wrestling, there's not a lot of music going on. So it's hard to market and promote something that is reliant on music when there isn't music happening to the same extent that it was happening, and fans can't go out and engage. And so I've more or less put this on a back burner. I'm not saying that I'm giving up on music completely, but I'm age 34 now. You may have already known that. I've been involved in music heavily in one facet or another since 17. And as COVID has given me a lot of time to sit at home and think and reflect and analyze and, daydream and speculate and think about what could be next, it's really had me thinking, yes, music is a passion of mine, and yes, it's something that I've had a lot of fun with and I've made a lot of connections and stuff with people. But there's just something about wrestling. Wrestling is just the next level. It's something that I'm passionate about. It's something that I've been involved in. It's something that I pursue. Music for me became too much of a job. I'm not a musician, so to do a lot of the managing and the booking and the event coordination and the behind the scenes stuff, the not stage action, the less glamorous action, it just got to a point where it felt too much like a job. And when passion dies and you're not getting paid on top of it, money doesn't matter to me. Honestly, money doesn't matter to me. I have a day job. I make a small, minuscule amount of money doing these podcasts as well. And possibly there will be more opportunities with that in the future. And I just think that your heart, when you start phoning it in and you're just kind of going through the motions like I was starting to do with music, it just doesn't produce a quality product because it's not a true 100%. It was 100% for many years, but I have honestly just gotten burnt out on it. I've been doing it for a long time and I really just want to pursue things and get into some ring announcing gigs. My goal, whenever the world normalizes, whether that's in 2021 or maybe even a little bit beyond that, is to make myself available to these promotions, go through the motions, earn my stripes, pay my dues, things like that. And that's part of the reason I wanted a larger vehicle is because when these shows are happening and guys need space to tow the gear around, whether it's ring gear or something else, I wanted to have a vehicle that was large enough that I can contribute, throw a bunch of junk in it, get it to the next show, and hit the road with the team. And, my goal is to hopefully ring announce for five new wrestling promotions. I've done ring announcing in the past, and I want to do it again and to push myself to get into new places where I haven't been before. My goal is to try and forge new relationships with five new organizations and possibly even more, but at least do some ring announcing or some traditional commentary. Not all the smaller independent groups have commentary because some of the shows are only live, they don't end up on YouTube. But whatever I can do, referee work, extra work, things like that. Non-talent work, essentially. I'm not a pro wrestler. I don't want to be a pro wrestler. That's not a dream of mine. But I have missed doing these podcasts. It's only been two episodes, but we're gonna make up for that today because we're gonna do the AEW review. Then I'm going to dive in later today and do the NXT review. But I kind of wanted to explain, where I've been, so it doesn't seem like I've abandoned anybody. And also, I just wanted to spend a little bit of time before this episode. Instead of covering news and notes, we'll save that for the next podcast with the NXT review. We'll talk about a bunch of the stuff we've missed because wrestling doesn't stop. Just because I take a few days off doesn't mean that the wrestling world stops. So we will cover all of that. But this podcast has essentially become a little bit of an offshoot of a family for me. And that's kind of what I wanted it to become. As I've gotten more involved in the wrestling figure community, using online forums and Facebook groups, and have met all these people, this podcast has kind of grown to be an offshoot of that, and it's been really amazing. When you start a new project, especially something like a podcast, I record these and then I put them out there and I see where they go, I see who picks them up, who has interest, and all I have to go off of is the feedback of the listener. So if no one is commenting or sharing any sort of correspondence via email, it's hard at times to know if I'm really connecting with people. And I was a little bit afraid to open up the platform today and see where things stood after falling off, because the internet keeps moving. Whether or not you take a break or take some time off, the world keeps going without you, so you can't take too long of a break. And I was really worried that some of the listenership would fall off, but I was pleasantly surprised to click in and see that the last episode, which was on October 16th, has 60 plays, 60 streams, and that's pretty damn good. I've only been doing this for under a month so far. We're already up collectively as a total to over 700 streams on the channel, so that's really awesome and very humbling. And I hope it can continue. I think realistically, we're going to get ourselves to a position soon where 1,000 streams a month is considered a very normal minimum. And I know that some of that is going to come from people listening to different podcasts multiple times and things like that. But I appreciate it. Anything that you guys can do to share this podcast, grow this podcast. Right now, it might seem mundane. It's just me talking about pro wrestling and trying to keep you guys entertained. But I promise you, as soon as the wrestling world reopens and as soon as I'm able to get to live shows, even the pro stuff. So I'll tell you, I don't know exactly what the ETA on this is. It's more of a hope and a desire right now. I don't know if it's actually going to come to fruition. I think it will. It's just a matter of when and not if. But I want to fly out to Jacksonville. Since COVID seems like it's sticking around for a little bit longer, I want to fly out to Jacksonville and go to a AEW broadcast and just see. It would be awesome because Orlando's right there as well, if I could go to NXT. But I don't believe that they have that open. I think that the crowds you see there is a mixture of Performance Center students and then friends and family of the talent. So it's not open to the public. It would be really cool to kind of turn that into a whole little week or two vacation, go to AEW one Wednesday and then Orlando for the next one. But I want to do some more research. I think on last night's episode of AEW, they even had a phone number. They were promoting the upcoming shows in November. And I want to say I heard them give a 1-800 number. And that's the thing I want to check on. I know that you can definitely go to these shows, and as long as you pass the temperature check and as long as you stay in the pod and wear a face mask, I know that anyone is welcome. But I want to make sure there's no travel bans or protocol I'm missing, because I'm going to be flying all the way out from California, and I would hate to buy a ticket. Even if they were able to give me a return, it would be a bummer to fly out to from California to Florida and then only find out that I can't go because Florida's hotbed or California's a hotbed and, you know, certain states can't go. I don't believe that that's the instance. I don't think that they have any bans. You can come from any state. I don't think you can come from other countries. But again, I'm not really 100% sure on how any of this safety stuff is working. And AEW does seem to take the protocol very seriously, which I respect and admire. So I want to make sure that I'm not setting myself up for disappointment. But the hope is I want to get through the holiday season, because I work in retail sales and it has the potential to be busy even during COVID. And I don't want to put my company out to dry like that. So I just want to get through Halloween, go through November and December, and then hopefully in January or February, fly out there, make a little vacation, I do have friends out there, so I can make it into a whole little thing. And so I'm thinking about going out there for somewhere around 4 days, fly out there, go see some wrestling, have some downtime with my buddies, and then fly back. So just as the world continues to open and grow, more opportunities like that are going to happen. As soon as I can get my butt in the seats at these other, like, more independent shows around the region, I'll be interviewing people. I'll be reaching out to wrestlers and promoters and these different individuals. I've established some connections with people, but it's been a little bit hard to nail down solid interview dates when you're communicating with people online because of the fact that things get buried on social media. I'm trying to just get to a point where I can have more of an email correspondence because it's easier for me to go through my Gmail account and keep everything sorted versus a Facebook, because Facebook has got it's got, a lot of personal stuff. And anytime I buy something off of Facebook Marketplace, wrestling action figures or something, it just gets buried. And I don't always remember the people's names, and it's just so hard to find stuff. But at least on email, I think it's a little bit more manageable, and everything just stays in a better forum. So, hopefully, a lot of really good content to come. I know I've been teasing that and promising that for a while. Not really going to be able to give you guys a better ETA on when that's going to change. It's all up to science and COVID and cures and things like that. So as soon as the world wants to be our friend and wants to kill COVID, we just got to get through this. We only have a mega crisis like this every 100 years, so we should be good going forward. We can knock this out, and maybe the past generations that are coming up behind us can thank us for getting the 100-year pandemic out of the way. They should be good now until another 120 years or something. But we'll go ahead and we'll dive on into Wednesday night's episode of Dynamite. AEW, and maybe it's because I'm a mark, they have been doing a really good job at producing shows recently that have had a bit of a pay-per-view type of feel, in my own opinion. So I try to always look at wrestling in a positive light. I fell down a little bit of a wormhole today. I got in the comments section, guys, and you should never read the comments of a YouTube video or a Facebook social media post, because it's just always negativity, and just it's just the worst parts of people, unfortunately. And I know that that's a vocal minority, so I try to avoid that stuff as much as possible, because I know that in general, most wrestling fans are caring, compassionate, understanding, and reasonable individuals. Even those that do lash out on social media, I think they have a bit of a disconnect where they forget that that does have real-world bearings, that people see your name and your picture and who you're associated with, and they read the disrespectful comments you can post. And sometimes people forget that that has a real world effect. So I try to avoid the comment section if at all possible. I say my piece and then I get out of there, or I share my podcast or whatever my form of engagement at that time is. But I try not to even read them, because you read them and sometimes they can fire you up and it's hard to not respond, especially when it comes to things like AEW. Is in an interesting place where they're pushing the envelope and they're hiring transgender wrestlers and gay wrestlers. And it's unfortunate that whenever one of those wrestlers is brought up, there's just something. I was talking about the match that Sonny Kiss had, and we'll talk about that match and the result. And I was just voicing my feedback, how I thought the match could have gone differently. Perhaps still had the same result. I'm being a little vague right now because I want to save that till we get to that segment in the show review. But I thought they could have done things in the Sonny Kiss match a little bit differently. Still had the same result, but protected Sonny's character a little bit more as a wrestler. But they didn't seem to go that way. And it's unfortunate because once you start having those takes, you get people who call you a faggot and want to be homophobic, and it's just so weird to me. I do respect that some people might be uncomfortable with that type of subject matter. That's your right. It's not your right to ridicule, but it is your right to, I don't know your background. So if you didn't grow up in a open home and your mother and father or grandparents or whoever raised you didn't teach you to be kind, compassionate, and welcoming to others, then maybe that is off-putting. Maybe that's not something you're used to. And I hope that wrestling and all medias, but wrestling, because that's what we're here talking about today, can open more doors and get people to think, you know, maybe they haven't seen a gay person before or a trans person before, and they just don't understand it. Because usually we lash out and we fear things that we don't understand. So the more things can be normalized and accepted, then the more we're going to grow as a society. So we will dive into the show. So heading into the show, here's what we knew. Here's what was being teased. We had just come off of last week's episode, which was the AEW 1 year anniversary, the Dynamite special. So that had a very pay-per-view type feel. It felt built up. There was a lot of stuff to look forward to. When I say pay-per-view feel, that's more or less what I mean. It's like stuff to look forward to. A promotion can tell you, tonight we're going to have the masked luchador versus the high-flying sensation. And sure, you know that's coming, but whether or not you are looking forward to it, that establishes your excitement level, and that, in my opinion, is what gives it the pay-per-view feel. So we had that show that had a lot of hype. The week before that, we had the Jericho 30-year anniversary, so that had a lot of hype. And then tonight, we had a lot of stuff with the Eliminator Tournament. I believe they're building towards a new champion. I think we're going to get our third AEW champion here soon, and we'll talk about that some more. But we also knew that we were going to get Le Dîner Debonair, which was going to be Jericho and MJF sitting down for a steak dinner and exploring MJF possibly joining the Inner Circle. I think we all know how that's going to go, but I think it can be an interesting adventure along the way. We knew we were going to get the number one contenders match, which was the Fatal 4-Way for the tag team number one contendership, Private Party, the Young Bucks, Butcher and the Blade, and Dark Order's Alex Reynolds and John Silver were going to represent the four teams. We knew that the tournament was going to happen, and that was going to feature a ton of participants as well. So the show did open up, and the first match was Jungle Boy versus Wardlow. This one was cool. Some of the matches were predictable. It's hard when you've been watching wrestling for as long as I have to not kind of just know what things are going to happen. You can generally make a prediction just because there's only so many ways to tell a story. So anytime wrestling can surprise me, I'm happy with it. And so while other matches on this card were a little bit more predictable, this one, I had a heavy inkling that I knew what was going to happen. I thought I knew who was going to win, but I kind of saw that it could go either way. They talk up Jungle Boy a lot. They always tell us that guys like him and Darby Allin are the future of the company. And as long as they can stay healthy, I think that's very much true. So part of me was thinking that Jungle Boy could go that route. But then I also thought, you know, Wardlow's a big guy. He's got the look that a professional wrestling company would want. They can push him a little bit further going on. So the match would start off, and Wardlow was pretty dominant as the bigger man. One thing I thought was a little bit interesting was when Jungle Boy came out, he entered with Luchasaurus and Marco Stunt, but then he asked them to go backstage so he could do this on his own, which was cool. But I also was like, you know, it's a big moment. Why wouldn't you want your buddies out there? But he's a face, so I think they were just establishing you didn't need your buddies out there, because sometimes when you have valets and you have action at ringside, there can be some outside interference, and that's not the character that Jungle Boy is portraying. But I like Luchasaurus, so I always like to see him. So we only got a quick glimpse of him there. So at different points in the match, at one point, Jungle Boy was actually thrown hard into the ring post, and he was like struggling to breathe, and Wardlow was just really dominant, looking really strong, kind of heading in into the match, and he started targeting Jungle Boy's back. He was punishing him, and the commentary team just kept talking about how Wardlow matches are really typically short and how he finishes people really fast. And so it was established that maybe if Jungle Boy could get Wardlow to go to the distance and stretch out the match and make it longer, then possibly the match could be in his favor as the smaller opponent, because Jungle Boy might get winded and tired out. Sometimes I really love JR on commentary. He's a legend. He's a Hall of Famer. He has left his fingerprints all over pro wrestling in the most positive ways. But sometimes it seems like they give him too much of a leash in AEW. And I know that they're trying to be different and not be heavily scripted in terms of commentary. I know we always hear about Vince McMahon and his guy's ears over there at WWE. And I think AEW is trying their damnedest to not be like that. And that makes sense. But the problem is sometimes JR inadvertently undercuts the company. And so there was a point in there where he talked about Wardlow, and I don't think this was his intention, even though Wardlow was a heel, but he kind of cut Wardlow down. And he said things like, oh, well, you know, I'm not really familiar with Wardlow. I haven't seen a lot of the big guys' matches. He doesn't wrestle a lot. And then Excalibur, I think maybe it's because he and I are in a similar age bracket, so we think similar, but Excalibur seemed like he was trying to kind of save that and keep Wardlow seeming like a dominant. And so Excalibur brought up, well, JR, I commentate over on Dark, and this is what's actually happening. And he kind of made Wardlow seem like a credible threat. I don't think JR meant anything by it. I don't think he was purposely trying to, the internet's favorite word, bury anybody. But it was just kind of bizarre that, like, one of your lead announcers, your top guys, your most polished veterans in terms of the commentary business was sort of like making Wardlow sound like he wasn't shit when he's been associated with MJF, who's one of the most over guys in the company. And it was just, it was weird. I don't know why they let JR. I don't know if they talked to him after the match or if he's just a legend and he's kind of like grandpa, and so you let him say stuff even though it's kind of wild to give him the benefit of the doubt. It was just a little bit weird, in my opinion. I don't think that JR should have done that. But ultimately, I don't think it hurt anything. I just notice it so often in different scenarios. At least once a week, he does something that I don't know if I overanalyze because I have aspirations of wanting to commentate. But there's just times I think about, like, oof, if I said that, you know, that could burn my bridge with somebody. I would never want to devalue someone's product. As a commentator, that's your job, is to build it up and make all the stars seem like they have incredible stories and build them up, even as a heel. Even if you're building up their heel tendencies or building up the hero tendencies of a face, it just it was a little bit interesting. And they need to decide if Dark is, like, they need to establish what Dark really is. I know it's a YouTube show. I know that there's rumors that they may get a second show that would be on TBS. So they need to decide, in my opinion, I don't want to sound like I'm armchair booking and telling them what to do, but I guess that's part of the fun of this podcast, is to fantasize and speculate. But it seems like they need to decide when the second show comes, if a second show comes. Does Dark go away, and does that second show kind of take over, or does Dark remain? Because Dark always has like a Sunday Night Heat kind of vibe to it. It's where the not so established stars can kind of get built up, and some of the indie darlings can have matches and things like that. But if you're gonna have guys like Wardlow and you're a little bit more established talent over there, and then you're not going to talk about it directly on your main show on Wednesday nights, and your head commentary guy, your Hall of Famer, is going to sit there and act like he doesn't understand where a character stands. It JR is essentially saying, hey, I don't watch Dark, so why should I care about this guy? And that's weird. And I guess that's Excalibur's job, is to make us care about these guys. But I just think there could be a way that JR could say, hey, you know, I'm not really familiar with Excalibur the way that I know you are. I know you've seen a lot more of his matches over there on Dark. He's a big son of a gun. He's a burly tough SOB. What more could you tell us about him, Excalibur? And then Excalibur could paint that picture. Hey, you know, his matches are brutal and they're short and he's violent and he's a fierce competitor. And, you know, then they can go from there. Back to the match. Wardlow would go on to defeat Jungle Boy. It was a pretty, not a quick match, not a short match, just like an average length match. I did think maybe that they could let Jungle Boy win, but I guess you got to keep some of your big dogs because there's not many true giants in AEW. You've got Brody Lee, you've got Wardlow, you've even got Miro, but he's kind of in his little tag team thing right now with Kip Sabian. So everyone else is more of a, they'd be like a mid-level intercontinental division guy if they were in the other business. So you gotta push your heel to the next level, to the next round. So Jungle Boy did his job. He showed some resilience throughout the match, and so he doesn't look weak losing that match. They gave him a strong showing. And he'll keep doing his thing. He'll be a tag team wrestler for a long time. I think it's fine for tag team wrestlers to also have single success. So hopefully they'll find a balance as they move forward in the coming years. Because I would hate to see Jurassic Express break up. We see that a lot in wrestling where bookers don't always understand how to kind of position a guy as both. So we'll have to see where things go. If Wardlow stays associated with MJF, it's hard to imagine him as a champion, whether it's the AEW or the TNT championship. Eventually, I would imagine he and MJF will split. They've teased it a few times. I think it's inevitable. I don't know if it's anytime soon. If MJF does join Inner Circle, which I think will happen. I think he'll briefly join and then go on to feud with Jericho. So what does that do with Wardlow? Do they just split and that's all she wrote? Or do they have some formidable split? Because I think if they can have like a dissension in the ranks and Wardlow feels left behind or something because MJF went to Inner Circle and he wasn't welcome, they could have a whole feud right there. And it doesn't need to be a long feud. It could be a little month-long thing. It doesn't have to culminate at a pay-per-view, although it probably should to give it some finality, but it could just be like a feud that they build up and then a one and done match at one of their pay-per-views and then that's it. So the next one though is Sunny Kiss versus Kenny Omega. It was originally supposed to be Joey Janela in that spot, but Joey Janela was a part of that show at the Collective, which I want to say was in Maryland, but don't quote me on that. And apparently his opponent, because they did have a few little mini outbreak of COVID there, unfortunately. And I guess the guy that Joey Janela wrestled was tested positive after the show for COVID. And so even though it's not believed that Janela has it, because he was in proximity, they want to play it safe. So they're giving him, I guess, like the 10 or 14 day little rest period to just make sure that he's quarantined and stays healthy. So Sunny Kiss would get this spot because, you know, he's worked the program where he's Janela's tag team partner. So it makes sense. So before the match, Jon Moxley would cut a pre-recorded promo. He talked about his relationship with Eddie Kingston and announced that he will defend his title against him at Full Gear on November 7th in an I Quit match. He talks about how Kingston's attitude changed and how that was his buddy, and he kind of became a no-good, dirty, rotten bastard and a liar, a cheat, and a snake. And so this, of course, after the fallout, where Kingston choked him out at the end of the previous week's show. And they explained away any of the questions because AEW leans on their ranking system so heavily. So when they do things that don't make sense, like, well, how the hell is this guy a number one contender? They said that Jon Moxley demanded that match and that it had nothing to do with the ratings. Jon Moxley was just so embarrassed and hurt by the actions of his former friend to attack him like that. And he was just a pissed off SOB. And so now he wants to fight this guy. And I buy that. That works. That's good storytelling for me. You know, he's mad. He wants to whip some ass. So let's have a hell of a good match. And then Moxley can, if he retains, can take on whoever wins this tournament, because the finals of this tournament will be at Full Sail, or Full Sail, at Full Gear. So that'll establish the next challenger. I don't think Kingston is obviously going to win the championship, but I think that they could put on a good match. They legitimately do have a backstory and a friendship, so I'm sure they can work together and figure out a good match. I expect it to be brutal and have some high spots, and Cody loves blood, so I'm sure if he has anything to do with building the match, he'll do a thumbtack spot or tell them that they should bleed or something like that. So this should be a good one. So Omega came out and he revealed that he was doing a new version of his cleaner gimmick, which was a really positively received gimmick that he did in New Japan. And the internet has been clamoring for it. And AEW's proven to us that they very much listen to the internet in terms of signing their stars and running their programs and things like that. So the fans got what they wanted. Hopefully they'll tread that line carefully, because you cannot dictate to the World Wide Web too much. You always have that minority that can be very loud on the internet. And I think sometimes we think that's the majority, but it's just the whole mentality that hate is strong, but love is stronger. Hate is loud, but love is stronger. That's how the saying goes. And I think sometimes when people are upset, they're really loud on the internet. They type in all caps. They post often, so it seems like it, but it's only the same few people. And you don't want to become a fantasy booking promotion, because not all fans' insight is the same. You have people who will clamor for something and then get it and then complain about something new. So I think in this instance, though, it'll work out okay. So the cleaner was back, and he just went out there and mollywhomped Sonny Kiss. Sonny Kiss didn't get any offense in, and just it was a squash match. And I get that Sonny Kiss is not a future world heavyweight champion, most likely. Sad to say, but probably not. I don't think the world is ready for that. Maybe as a individual and a performer, if he continues to grow and work and get over with the fans, then possibly that could change. I could definitely see some tag team titles in his future, and possibly a singles run with like the TNT title. But it's just hard to imagine the wrestling world accepting an openly gay superstar. And hopefully this dude is the one, because, you know, he is a black performer. He is openly gay, and he is breaking barriers down every time he steps in the ring. So I think he could be a good voice. He could lead that. What am I trying to say? He could lead that front, and, you know, sail that ship and possibly get people to come around to it. But I don't know that that's going to happen anytime soon. I think he can definitely break down a lot of barriers, but someone else might have to be the one to actually do that. But he's got a long career ahead of him, as long as he stays healthy. I was disappointed, though, as someone who's really come around to Sonny Kiss a lot. I think you could have had that same result. It was the right result. I firmly believe that what we're going to see is Kenny Omega in the finals. I believe he's going to win, and I think he could potentially go on to become the next AEW champion. We've seen Moxley more or less feud with everyone, most of the top believable guys. Cody's out of the mix. I guess future feuds could possibly go with something with Adam Hangman Page, but he's gone through Brody Lee. He's fought, I believe, both Lance Archer and Brian Cage. So he's kind of run through a lot of the top performers. There's not really much left. So it does make sense that Omega would do it, would be the guy. I just hope they're careful with how they do things at the pay-per-view, because they are in a position where the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, and Cody Rhodes could potentially all be champions at the same time. And I don't know if they should go that route, unless they're going to go full heel and do like a authority type angle where every guy has a belt, because those guys are all executive vice presidents. So I don't know that fans would like that. I don't think I would like that. I think they all deserve to have championship runs, but I think they should come separately. I don't think, unless you're going for a heel angle, that it should be all at once. And I think that they could have allowed Sonny Kiss to get some offense in and work a regular match, and then, still have Kenny go over, because he didn't look like a monster coming out of it. It's not like, oh my God, Kenny Omega is incredibly strong. Look at how easily he defeated Sonny Kiss. We all expected him to defeat him, but he just came out and hit the one-winged angel super quick. And I don't know. I know that some people believe he's going to go full heel, and that might be true. Jon Moxley is kind of the face, so if it goes that route, he could be the heel in that feud. He didn't really exhibit heel behavior to me by doing his cleaner thing. He just came out and whipped ass really fast and decisively. But we'll see how it continues to build up. Next, we would see Penta versus Rey Fénix. This is the match that everybody's been talking about. It stole the show. I think we all fully expected it to. And it was a really, really good match. Fénix would go on to win this. So hopefully this doesn't break up the Lucha Bros. There was no tease that it really would. It was just two brothers fighting for an opportunity at the championship. So hopefully going forward, these guys will remain a tag team. I'm really excited to get their figures. Should be coming out wave two, really any week now. It was expected at the end of October that those series two of the AEW action figures would launch. It might be early November, but whenever it is, those should be ready to hit market soon. And people who pre-ordered them had the foresight to pre-order instead of doing the retail battle. It's not going to be fun to try to get series two and series three between COVID and distribution problems and Christmas. I think it's a must that you pre-order them if you can. But we could see things go. It'd be interesting. I highly doubt this will happen, but it'd be neat if Fénix could run the gauntlet and win the tournament. And then if Kingston won the championship and those two feuded, obviously that's not going to happen, but that's something from a storytelling perspective that they could paint a picture, because Kingston is kind of the leader of that little tag team stable that he's built. But these guys, they stole the show. I could sit here and I could try to break down the moves, but I'm not a wrestler. You don't need my color commentary. It was a really good, solid worked match. A lot of high-flying, obviously a lot of luchador, arm drags, things like that. It wouldn't be an AEW match without some cutters and some suicide dives. So you saw all of that. And if you have the opportunity to go back and find this on YouTube or wherever you consume your wrestling content, I would say to go back and watch this match. Even if you don't watch the whole show, even if you don't like AEW because you're a WWE guy or whatever it is, go check it out. Go peep it out. It's a good match. You can't be a real, true, non-biased wrestling fan and not like this match. It was a show stealer. It wasn't like, you know, top 50 matches of all time by any means, but it was a solid show. It was one of the best efforts we've seen from these guys in AEW. It was one of AEW's best matches so far year in, and it's a good solid match. We're going to see Fénix take on Kenny Omega next week in the continuation of the tournament. So that should be a show stealer. Hopefully they'll actually give those guys some time. They, I guess, got Omega looking strong by beating Sonny Kiss so decisively, but I hope that's not going to be a theme, is Kenny dominating matches to try to make him look like a credible threat. I think he has the resume that he doesn't need any additional buildup like that, he can just go out there, put on good matches, win matches, and have a title feud. I think him and Moxley could steal the show whenever they end up making that happen. I'm trying to think when the next pay-per-view is. I'm still kind of getting used to AEW's calendar, but they only really do the four shows. So hopefully they won't just give that title match away on free TV, even though I do really like the pay-per-view feel. Hopefully that'll be a pay-per-view match. Kenny Omega deserves a good showing if he does eventually go on to win the strap. So the next match would be Hangman Page taking on Colt Cabana. And Evil Uno was out on the stage kind of watching and supporting Colt Cabana. He never went down the ramp or went ringside or anything, but he did stay there and watch as his fellow Dark Order teammate, who kind of has the favorite son mentality going on. Brody Lee is not typically as mean to him. We have seen him be mean to him a little bit, but Brody Lee seems to favor him. And so there's a little bit of resentment, and I think that's why the other members of Dark Order weren't there. I think Evil Uno is just the second in command. When we first saw that group debut, and it was Evil Uno and Stu Grayson, those two seemed like the higher-ups. And I know they all have numbers, and I guess that's where they fall in the ranking. I'm not sure what – I guess Evil Uno's one, actually, obviously. And then they've got the rest of the crew. Cause I think Alex Reynolds and Stu Grayson flip flop. They're, one of them is three and one of them is four. I forget who is who. And then I forget who's two, but it's kind of interesting. The Dark Order group mostly sucks. It's honestly kind of a stupid, it was a really good idea. It's definitely not the worst thing, but they could probably do away with that at some point. I don't really know what Evil Uno would do afterwards. I know he can wrestle, and I don't know if he would team with Alex Reynolds with Stu Grayson, or if they would go another route, because it seems like Grayson and Reynolds have been teaming a lot. And I just think that Evil Uno would get lost in the shuffle. Doesn't seem like there's any dissension in Dark Order coming anytime soon, though. So it's been a good placeholder for some people, because I think Anna Jay also kind of falls in there, that she's just there, but she's not really doing anything. Like, it doesn't seem like it fits for her. They just make it fit. But for some reason, I think her and the Bunny could have a good feud if her and Allie wanted to fight. But the women's division is always going to need talent, so if and when Dark Order breaks up, she would definitely have a home. So that would be a good match. We saw some intensity from Colt Cabana. He slammed Hangman Page onto the apron hard at two different points throughout the match. He even hit like a big splash on him where he ran from the apron and then just kind of did like a big old crossbody splash. And Hangman would tease the little slingshot lariat that he does, and it would get blocked once, and then a second time he would fake Colt out, and then a third time he would actually hit it, and that would give him the victory for the 1-2-3. So ultimately, I think we will see a finals of Kenny Omega and Adam Hangman Page. I think everyone would agree on that. I would be surprised if anyone had a different take, and if you do have a different take, I'd love to hear it. Because logistically, from a storytelling point of view, I don't see another story they could tell. Obviously, if they had to, they could, but I don't see one that makes sense. Those guys broke up. The tag team is over. They lost the belts. They kind of blame each other. The Elite broke up. And I just think that we're going to see the final write-off of that story. And then Omega will go on, and whether or not he becomes the champion, he's going to go on to be a single star. Some fans have been critical about how successful he was in New Japan and how he hasn't done much in AEW. But that just comes down to, you can't please everybody, because when Cody was running around on the indies and appearing on Impact and dancing with everybody and punching his card, everybody was all about it. Everyone loved All Out in Chicago. And then now that AEW is going, people are comparing him to Jeff Jarrett and saying that he's only putting himself over. And it's just like people are never happy. And I think that's why I was making the statement before that I would be very cautious if I was them about putting all the belts on all the executive vice presidents at once. It just is going to potentially piss off some fans. And since they seem to care what the internet thinks, I would think as a guy with a podcast on the internet, I would warn them to be a little bit cautious. I'd be perfectly cool with Orange Cassidy winning the TNT title next week in the rematch, which we'll talk about. And then he and Darby Allin can feud and do their thing, and then that would take the TNT title out of the mix. And then, you know, Kenny could win and be number one contender, because the title match isn't taking place at Full Gear, just the finals of the tournament. And then him and Moxley could do their dance later. The Bucks and FTR could have their feud, and FTR's heel, so I guess they're both heel, though, so I don't really know. That's why it's been so hard for me to buy into the Bucks. The Bucks are, like, Christian, and they're supposed to be heel, but it's just not believable. It's like a very John Cena-esque heel run where they're trying to talk, and instead of saying, I'm going to kick your ass, it's like, I'm going to kick your butt, and it's just not really believable. They're great workers, so we could see something there where they just kind of both play. Because I don't know if the Bucks are heels or if they're just tweeners. And they're just kind of in the middle. Because I would say that the FTR team is more bad guy than them. And I could see a scenario where the Bucks seem like they have their number. FTR has been talking about how for years these guys have been debating who's the best team. And maybe it seems like the Bucks are finally about to win. And FTR is like, oh no. And then they do some heel stuff and maybe retain. So interesting little thing to think about. See how they can maybe still go this route, but not put all the straps on everybody at the same time. So following that one, following Hangman Page, we would see the Le Dinner Debonair of Chris Jericho and MJF. And I knew this was going to be good. Jericho is just typically really good in these Festival of Friendship and these Jericho talk show things, and he's just an entertaining guy. If you are on YouTube and you watch any of his segments on the YouTube channel Inside the Ropes, he's just a showman. That's why he's successful on his podcast. He's just a compelling person to listen to. But I did not expect this to go the route that it did. So before the dinner segment, Taz and Ricky Starks were on the stage, and Brian Cage was there, and they basically are still continuing this thing with Will Hobbs. Will Hobbs was not there, but he says to him, like, hey, you still got to answer the question about whether you want to join Team Taz, or do you really want me to stick Brian Cage on you again? So they'll probably have those two feud, and then they talked a little more nonsense on Darby Allin, and Ricky Starks said that he doesn't know when or where, but if they step to each other again, he's going to put him in the grave, and he called him a half-faced painted little bitch or something like that. But so we would see Jericho and MJF, and they were having their dinner, and they wanted to prove how manly they were by ordering the rawest steak that they possibly could. One guy would say, I want mine well done, and one guy would say, I want mine medium and then medium rare and etc. And they would kind of go on, but it went into a musical, and it was pretty well done. I thought I had read somewhere that Jericho was a Tony-nominated performer. I don't know if that's true or if I got trolled. Obviously not for this segment, but, you know, he's in his band, and he does like music, although Fozzy is obviously not a group that would be up for a Tony. But, you know, he does have a musical background, and it seemed like they were lip-syncing, obviously, but they did a good job with it. I think they recorded their own vocals and then had them dubbed over, and they lip-synced it. And they had what I assume was the Jacksonville Jaguars cheerleaders, and they were doing a little song and dance routine along with the two. But I think these guys are going to build up kind of like what we saw Jericho and Kevin Owens do in WWE. They're going to build up. They're going to become buddies. There's going to be a town hall next week, and it's going to feature all the members of Inner Circle deciding on if MJF should join. I imagine that they're all going to say no, but ultimately he's going to join anyways. And then they'll go whatever way they go with that. I can't fully predict how that'll play out. And then at some point, obviously, the two of them will feud, and then we'll reset and we will see where things are. But it was good. I like this segment. Some fans are being critical of it on social media this morning, but we're all talking about it. I'm talking about it here. I've already seen some people make memes out of it. I've seen some people put it over. I've seen some people tear it down. And in wrestling, as long as people are talking, that's really ultimately all that matters. So I think they did their job. So Dr. Britt Baker would be back in action. It was good to see her. If they do make a figure of her, or when they do, because I think it's only a matter of time, I think it would be really incredible to see her figure have the ring gear she had tonight. So it was a gold ring jacket, which I encourage you to go take a look at a picture of, and then all pink ring gear in honor of breast cancer awareness. And so I really liked that look on her. She looked really sharp. And if, like I said, if and when they make a figure of her, I think that'd be good ring attire. She always kind of has good ring attire. And she took on Kylan King, which is a really tall redhead girl. She wrestles on dark. She was 0-11 heading into this match, and she's often used as an extra in the crowd. No surprise, as they try to build Britt Baker up, she is a future world champion in the women's division. It's just a matter of when. So they have to build her up. She has a pretty good AEW win-loss record, and I think they're going to build her up, give her some feuds. I think she was already positioned to go to be in a women's title match, but when she tore ACL, that kind of derailed things. So hopefully they're able to build her up fairly quickly, and then her and Sheeta could have a match, and maybe she could be the one to take the championship off. She would culminate the match, win by submission, and she wore a pink glove when she executed her lockjaw move to kind of complete her breast cancer awareness little thing that she was doing. It didn't really get good reviews from some of the critics I was reading, because some people want Kylan King to get a push, but she's a newer, unestablished talent. Britt Baker is obviously someone that AEW wants to build their women's division around. So I think sometimes you have to realize that not both people can get over in a match, and you really have to look at it like, hey, Kylan King was there to do a job. That's why she lost, and they're building Britt Baker up. So I think Kylan will definitely find her place in a division that needs as many talented women as possible, but it's just not her turn yet. She needs to build up a lot more. And so definitely really good. So next up, we would see the four-way match. It'd be tag title. So in this match, or tag number one contendership rather, you could tag anybody. You didn't have to tag your partner. You could tag anybody from the opposing team. And we would see a lot of false finishes where the Young Bucks weren't involved, but they would get in to prolong the match and sell their desperation of how much they wanted to battle FTR, even calling FTR out by name. And ultimately, they would go on to win this match, which I think we all expected. But Dark Order had a really good showing at different points in this match, even hitting a whole flurry of moves, including a big cutter. John Silver was hitting everybody that was moving at one point. And as a Butcher and the Blade fan, I hope that their days as champion are soon. I hope that they get their push. I know that they're still built up, and a lot of casual fans don't know who they are. And I didn't know who they were before AEW either, but hopefully their push will be soon. But the Young Bucks and FTR is going to take place at Full Gear on November 7th. But everybody looked good. It was a nice long match. I'm just kind of summarizing it real fast as we wrap towards the end here. And ultimately, that was our show, guys. It was a really good show. I'm always an AEW fan. They're a new, young company, so I'm always going to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. I don't want to be one of these fans who's hypercritical. It's a good showing. It's just nice. It's really nice to just have something somewhat new and refreshing on Wednesday nights. And I hope they're able to get a second show, and that whether or not they do a brand thing like WWE, I hope everybody is able to find a position and make a good show. But that's it. Until next time, I'm tapping out.